This spring, if you'd rather spend time enjoying your lawn instead of trying to keep it alive, there's good news. TruGreen is the easiest and most affordable way to get a beautiful lawn. All you have to do is water and mow, and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and even some things you might not even think of. They'll do all of it, while you can do literally anything else. With True Green, you could have your lawn looking as good as a putting green. That's not hyperbole. True Green is the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour. True Green offers a satisfaction guarantee, and they have a verified best price promise, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit TrueGreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people guaranteed.
It's Sunday, July 29th. I'm Margaret Brennan, and this is Face the Nation. President Trump dug in this week to try and fix some problems caused by his trade policies. First up, $12 billion in assistance to farmers to ease the pain of his tariffs. Then the president made up with the head of the European Union Commission, a group of allies he called his foe just 2 weeks ago, promising to work together for a future trade deal.
We also will resolve the steel and aluminum tariff issues, and we will resolve retaliatory tariffs. This was a very big day for free and fair trade.
And just in case there was any doubt, he tweeted a photo of EU Commission head Jean-Paul Juncker kissing him on the cheek, saying the EU and U.S. love each other. But the president's biggest triumph on the economic front came Friday, and no surprise, he took a victory lap.
And I am thrilled to announce that in the second quarter of this year, the United States economy grew at the amazing rate of 4.1%. We've turned it all around. Once again, we are the economic envy of the entire world.
We'll talk to the president's top economic advisor, Larry Kudlow, about whether that growth is real and sustainable. Plus, the president's attorney, Rudy Giuliani, weighs in on the new allegations against Mr. Trump from his longtime fixer, Michael Cohen. We'll also hear from a Republican who's not happy with the impact of those tariffs on his home state, Wisconsin's Ron Johnson, and New Hampshire Democrat Gene Shaheen. We have new polling from our battleground tracker about America's views on President Trump's trade policies and its impact on the midterm elections. Plus analysis on all the news just ahead on Face the Nation. Good morning and welcome to Face the Nation. We begin today with President Trump's attorney, Rudy Giuliani, who is in our New York broadcast studio this morning. Mr. Mayor, thank you for joining us. The president told CBS News earlier this month he still wants to speak to special counsel Robert Mueller. So when, where, what format?
Well, you know, we've kind of been distracted on all kinds of things, starting with Peter Strzok and the Horowitz report, and now Michael Cohen, really surprising all of us. And
is that what's holding up your negotiations?
Well, it keeps us away from it. And also the special counsel is kind of tied up, although quietly, in the Manafort, getting ready for the Manafort trial. So we have negotiations going on with them. We have an outstanding offer to them. They haven't responded in about a week to 10 days. I don't hold that against them. I think they got a lot going on like we do.
What does that offer look like?
Well, I can't tell you what the offer looks like, except there is a sort of area of questioning and a group of restrictions on it that you know, we could live with. I think I'd have to reanalyze that in light of the new facts, but I don't think that's going to change it very much.
This is narrow to the Russia probe and not obstruction of justice, or how narrow?
It relates basically to the Russia collusion thing, which we think there's no evidence and present to anything wrong. So we don't really have much of a problem with it. With the obstruction thing, it's more a question of we don't see the legal basis for a president obstructing by merely taking an action in firing somebody that he had every right to fire and about 10 good reasons to fire. So we don't just acknowledge the basis for that. But, you know, we might consider a few questions in that area also. But at this point, it's best left to us and them to do that quietly. There's enough going on with the Southern District thing.
When are we going to find out? When are you going to nail this down?
I think a couple, maybe this week, maybe next week.
Last time you told us it was July 4th, Mr. Mayor.
Well, a lot happened since July 4th. Peter struck. Our friend Cohen going rogue. I mean, lots of things.
The New York Times is reporting that special counsel Robert Mueller is looking into whether the president's tweets added up to any kind of obstruction of justice here. Have you advised the president not to tweet, at least not to tweet about his attorney general?
Good luck about tweeting. First of all, obstruction by tweet is not something that I think works real well. Generally, obstruction is secret. It's clandestine. It's corrupt. You don't want the evidence out in the public so it can be used against you. And I've looked at all those tweets, and they don't amount to anything but the man complaining about an unfair investigation, which even if he wasn't the president, he has a First Amendment right to do that. I don't think there's anything there that gets him beyond the First Amendment. And second, a lot of his tweets have been very helpful. The reason he may not have to testify is he's laid out his defense clearly, like this whole Russian thing. He's made it clear he didn't know about the meeting beforehand.
You're talking about the Trump Tower meeting that Michael Cohen apparently
he's made it clear, and now,
the president
and now
didn't know in advance about.
Yeah, well, I mean, I don't see how you can believe Michael Cohen. Michael Cohen is also the guy that taped him without telling him, taped Chris Cuomo taking his cell phone and putting it in a drawer and saying, I'm not recording it, and then did a two-hour recording that we now have. He did that at least four other times. I mean, to my surprise, he turns out to be almost an instinctual liar. So there's no way this guy's credibility is going to withstand four or five witnesses saying the exact opposite.
You called him an honest, honorable lawyer just a few weeks ago.
Yeah.
What changed?
How did I know? Why would I have not thought he was? I mean, I never had a bad dealing with Michael. I was being straight and honest. I didn't know that he taped conversations surreptitiously. I didn't know he would grossly violate the attorney-client privilege. I didn't know he would mislead dozens of reporters and tape them all over the place and pretend to them directly, I'm not recording you.
How much of the evidence that the FBI sees from Michael Cohen's place of work and residence relates to the president beyond tapes?
Well, let me see if I can make it about as clear as possible. We know of something like 183 unique conversations on tape. One of those is with the President of the United States. That's the three-minute one involving the McDougal payment, AMI McDougal payment. There are 12 others, maybe 11 or 12 others, out of the 183, in which the president is discussed at any length by Cohen, mostly with reporters, all clearly corroborating what the president has said in detail on many of those tweets. In other words, that he didn't know about the payments to either one when they happened, that he only found out later, that Cohen made them not for the campaign. He didn't like the campaign. He says very derogatory things about the campaign. He said, I only made it because I personally love the president and Melania. And that's why I made the payments, which takes it right out of the campaign contribution arsenal. So these are tapes I want you to read. I want you to hear them. I didn't think I'd be able to get them out publicly. And somehow he and his lawyer have this crazy idea, just throw it all out there. I think they also don't realize it's going to hurt them with the prosecutors. When I was a prosecutor, I didn't want some guy giving out all the evidence to the press.
But you do want these tapes released now?
I can't do it. I mean, I'm not allowed to do it. We've not leaked a single tape. I think if you check with the reporters who did the stories, they tell you that. The Times came forward and made that clear. We don't violate these rules. However, we are allowed to refer to them if they put them out. Why they're putting them out, someday somebody is going to have to figure it out. They're doing it.
You mentioned Karen McDougal. This recording that was made public earlier this week relates to her. She claims she did have a consensual affair with the president. But I want to ask you, beyond this case, beyond Stormy Daniels, were other payments made to as yet unnamed women around the time of the 2016 campaign?
There is a conversation about that on one of the tapes in which I think Chris Cuomo asked him that, and Cohen says no, denies it, said that there were no other situations like this.
Was that an accurate statement by Cohen?
As far as I know, yeah. I have no evidence to disprove that. And we've searched the records. I mean, remember, both these payments were made, or at least the McDougal payment, was going to be made through a corporation. Well, you're hardly going to make an illegal contribution through a corporation. And that whole dispute about check or cash really couldn't have been done any other way but by check. It's a corporation, after all, making the payment.
But you maintain that payment didn't actually occur?
That one didn't happen for reasons, I guess, that AMI wanted to keep it. They probably saw value in keeping it. I mean, I know a lot of people raise questions about it, but it's pretty clear from the tape. This is a straight-out-and-out legal and business transaction.
The CFO for the Trump Organization, Alan Weisselberg, was subpoenaed this week to testify in the criminal probe around Michael Cohen. Does any of this cross that red line that the president has said in terms of touching his own personal finances?
No, I think these are about the things we're talking about to see are they corroborated, and they are. Or they could be about other things that they may have some knowledge of that Cohen was doing independent of the president. I should finish that discussion of the tapes by telling you, yes, there are 183 presidents on one, mentioned on 12 others. There are then an untold number of other tapes that do have no relation to us, meaning President Trump, that have to do, I guess, with what the Southern District originally raided him for. Those tapes, I don't know what's on those. Now, if they related to us, the government would have to give them to us. The
right.
government has been totally ethical about this, so I don't believe there's any question. But there's a lot there for them to investigate. And, you know, when you just look at a box, you can't tell what it contains. But
right.
I sure wouldn't want to have that box there in
All
the
right.
FBI's possession if it was me.
All right, Mr. Mayor, there's always another part to the story. We'll continue
to
track
it. Every time I talk to you, it changes.
Well, we look forward to having you on again. I'm going to speak now to a friend of yours, Larry Kudlow, the director of the President's National Economic Council. Larry, welcome back. So good to see you.
Thank you.
We did have a good economic growth number, that Q2 number, 4.1%. It's hard to argue it was anything but a good win for the president. But when you take it apart, was this sort of just a temporary burst of buying ahead of the implementation of the president's tariffs?
No, I don't think so at all. I mean, the basics of this number were consumer spending and business investment. Those are the basics of any number, C plus I, to put it in economic terms. It's doing terrific. It's rising by better than 4%, as was the overall. And I know some people have tried to downgrade this by saying about the tariffs, buy ahead of tariffs. By the way, we don't know that. There's a lot of theories about that. I'm glad to see exports rising, whatever the reason. The biggest thing that nobody's talked about in terms of these smaller issues is inventories. Inventories fell by, I think, $25 billion. That's very unusual. Mm. It took at least a percentage point off of GDP. But these things jump around a lot. The heart of this report, as I said, consumer spending, business investment are on a tear. Business investment is on a tear, which was really what our tax cuts were designed
right.
to do.
And your deregulation.
The deregulation, thank you, and the energy. And by the way, the president's attitude, the war against business is over, the war against success is over, the war
against
energy is over.
But then he's got a trade war, Larry. He's got trade disputes, even with some of our allies, and that's the thing that makes people worried that everything you just laid out is going to go up in smoke.
Up in smoke.
Can you promise that NAFTA will be done ahead of the November races, that you will get that agreement in principle to actually be a hard agreement with the
Europeans? Actually, on Mexico, just to pinpoint that, we're making very good progress. And something good may be announced in the not-too-distant future.
By September?
The biggest one was the European Union. I'm just waiting for you to get to the EU, where I had a role. And POTUS was unbelievable. And President Juncker was unbelievable.
You helped to cool off those tensions this week.
More than that. I mean, yes, I think that's true. But also, the EU, President Juncker, I mean, comes right out of the gate saying we will buy a ton of your soybeans, which will help ameliorate
the
China
EU
problem.
You know that buy that. European nations of private businesses would have to.
Indeed. And I
right.
think they will. And I think there's a lot of momentum for that.
So this wasn't an actual transaction. This is a promise to do something in the future.
We will have an actual transaction.
On what?
Guaranteed. Starting out right away with soybeans, beef, and liquid natural gas, LNG, which is a huge topic.
But the European Commission says that agricultural products are absolutely not up for negotiation. You're saying they are.
They will be part of the negotiations. But I don't want to get in the way of their domestic issues, okay? We are going to be very accommodative. They will be very accommodative. Again, if ag's not part of it, what are soybeans doing?
Right.
What's beef doing? In the final document that was signed by both, we talked about opening markets for farmers and for workers. So, no,
What's
I don't buy that.
What's the timetable on this?
Immediately. Immediately. We're starting immediately.
Are you going to be negotiating this?
We started immediately.
Or is the trade representative?
I'll be involved. Bob Lighthizer is the key guy, absolutely. We will be starting immediately. We'll be setting up a layered process to examine all the different areas. Remember,
can you get this by September? Because we still have the Commerce Department saying they're reviewing whether to put these auto tariffs on or not.
That's fair enough, and they are reviewing.
That's a knife hanging over your neck.
Well, I don't know if it's a knife. We'll see how that study comes out. The president asked for it, and
the
Commerce Department will give it.
We'll see that 20% tariff on autos?
I don't want to get ahead of anything in this game, Margaret, as you well know. All I'm going to say is the EU story is moving ahead very rapidly, very rapidly. And I think that, by the way, puts China in a very difficult position. China is, I think, being isolated. I don't know if they realize it or not. I assume they do. Not only is the EU and the U.S. coming back together, as I said before, I'm looking forward to a deal on Mexico, and I think a deal with Canada is out there.
But
so
as you
China,
say, this is
China,
really
all
about
of a sudden,
China. But if
China
China's
is
not
all,
coming to the table, then
well,
what are these tariffs accomplishing?
The tariffs have moved a lot of people to the table, including the European
Beijing.
Union, including Mexico. Well, we'll see about that, you know. As I said before, a key point here is that all of a sudden the Chinese are being isolated. China, by the way, asked the EU to do a trade deal. The EU said no. The EU said to us, we would much rather have a deal with you, the United States, and that's why President Trump and President Juncker's meeting was so important, and the process is beginning immediately. So this is very good news in my judgment.
But, so you are a Reagan-era conservative.
I am.
Doesn't it send shivers up your spine when you start talking about giving aid bailout to farmers, when you start talking about deficits now growing more towards $1 trillion in 2019, when you start talking about trade wars here? Isn't there a less destructive way to get to the growth you want to see?
Well, look, first of all, lowering tax rates and rolling back regulations and opening up energy is a great way for growth, and that's what we're seeing. And President's program, you know, we've only been doing this, I guess, five Trump quarters. We're almost at 3%, 3.1 in the first half and 4.1 in the second quarter. It's working. It's all working. People
so you're
said
telling
we
farmers
couldn't
the pain's
do it.
Worth it.
So that's one point. No, I'm not telling anybody. I'm not for pain. I'm for prosperity, as always. But here, President Trump has said he wants to end tariffs. He wants to end non-tariff barriers. He wants to end subsidies. And he is a free trader. But sometimes you have to target tough tariffs to do so, okay? And that's what he's doing, and I think it's beginning to show some success. Only been 6 months since he's been on this track.
Yep.
So, no. And regarding the deficit, let me say this. The increase in growth is going to be a big factor in lowering the deficit.
Mm-hmm.
Even the CBO numbers, and they've never agreed with us on taxes and dynamics.
Yeah, but
Mick
Mulvaney put out a number this week that I was referring to on the $1 trillion.
Yes, but look, behind that number, in the short run, do we lose some revenues to invest in our economy? Absolutely. Even the CBO numbers, show now that the entire $1.5 trillion tax cut is virtually paid for by higher revenues and better nominal GDP.
These are all
good things, Margaret.
We have to leave it there because I'm out of time. We'll be back in 1 minute with a lot more Face the Nation, so don't go away.
Are you having trouble sleeping? NFL players have been coached. Blue light from smart devices, it can affect your sleep. They'll even wear blue blocker glasses in the evening for improved sleep. Others will try tart cherry juice and smoothies. Not only can it help fight inflammation, but to help you sleep, it's got high amounts of natural melatonin that's beneficial for sleep. The other night, my girlfriend told me I was snoring way too much and even the earplugs weren't helping. So the next day, she took me to a Sleep Number store because if I was snoring, at least she could get a good night's sleep on a Sleep Number bed. Sleep Number beds allow you to adjust on each side to your ideal firmness, comfort, and support. The Sleep Number 360 smart bed senses your movement and automatically adjusts to keep you sleeping comfortably through the night. With Sleep IQ technology inside the bed, it tracks how you're sleeping so you can know every morning how well you've slept and gain insights for your best sleep. Experience the smart, effortless comfort of the Sleep Number 360 smart bed. Find your competitive edge with proven quality sleep from $999. Sleep Number is the official sleep and wellness partner of the NFL. You'll only find Sleep Number at one of their 575 Sleep Number stores nationwide. Find the one nearest you at sleepnumber.com/cadence. That's sleepnumber.com/CADENCE. Sleep Number.
We're back with Democratic Senator Jean Shaheen. She sits on the Armed Services and Foreign Relations Committee. She's in Portsmouth, New Hampshire this morning. Senator, welcome to Face the Nation. You just heard the president's economic advisor lay out a very rosy picture about the economy. These trade disputes, how are they affecting people in New Hampshire?
Well, we have 140,000 jobs that are at risk if these tariffs continue. It was very good economic news this week, but that's why it's so hard to understand why anyone thinks that the uncertainty around these tariffs and the potential trade war are going to be good for the economy. People here are very concerned about that uncertainty. Everybody from Little Bay Lobster Company, who's lost huge orders every week to China, and they're worried they're not going to get that market back, that they've gone to Canada, to manufacturing companies like Filtrene over in the western part of the state where they make water filtering systems. So this is affecting businesses. And one of the things I was very sorry to hear Ambassador Lighthizer say this week at when he came before the Appropriations Subcommittee was that while they're talking about a bailout for farmers, they're not talking about help for small businesses who are being hurt.
Oh, it's a good point you raised there, and the administration says they won't consider that at this point. I do want to ask you, though, about a colleague of yours in the Senate, Senator Claire McCaskill. She faces a toss-up election out in Missouri, and she confirmed personally this week that Russian hackers unsuccessfully tried to access her Senate computer system. Microsoft, I guess, was out there saying she's one of at least three individuals who were targeted. Who else is on that list?
I don't know who else is on the list, but I do know that we've had an experience in our office with people getting phishing emails with social media accounts. There has been one situation that we have turned over to authorities to look into, and we're hearing that this is widespread with political parties across the country as well as with members of the Senate. So this is a very big issue, and it's something that we need to address in a bipartisan way. It affects both Republicans and Democrats. It's about the security of our political process and our government functions, and we need to work together to address it.
I know you had some testy exchanges this week before the Senate Foreign Relations Committee with the Secretary of State, Mike Pompeo, pressing him for more information on that conversation with Vladimir Putin. Were you satisfied with his answers?
Well, I was disappointed that he refused to address directly any of the specific questions about what happened in Helsinki between President Trump and Vladimir Putin. He continuously referred to policy being the same, and I appreciate that. It is important for us to continue those policies. But what we don't know is what might have been agreed to by the president, and all we've gotten in direct information about what happened has come from the Russian authorities, from their defense ministry. And I'm particularly concerned about Syria, because that's one place where Secretary Pompeo did equivocate and where the president has gone back and forth on what we should be doing. I was there several weeks ago with Lindsey Graham, and we were in northeast Syria where, thanks to our efforts and working with the Syrian Democratic Forces, who are mostly Kurds, we have seen the region stabilize. We need to make sure that continues. We need to find out why the White House is still holding on to the funding that we need for reconstruction efforts there, because the security is good. People are going back home. We went through the market in Manbij, which had been controlled by ISIS for several years. People were out. Kids were playing in the streets. Women were walking around. We need to make sure that that continues and not leave those Syrians to the Russians or to Assad.
Should the president go ahead with sanctions on Turkey, which he called for this week?
I think Turkey is an important ally of the United States. They're an important NATO ally. But we've seen some behavior by Turkey that is not consistent with what we expect from our allies.
That sounds like a yes.
Again, on that trip to... Well, I think we need to see them release the Americans that they're holding on trumped-up charges. We had some positive news this week with Pastor Brunson mm-hmm. going from prison to house arrest. But they're holding other Americans.
Yes.
And we need to send a consistent message. Again, on that trip to Syria, Senator Graham and I met with President Erdogan.
Senator,
he listened.
We do have to, we're running out of time here. I'm so sorry to cut you off, but we do have to leave it. Thank you for coming on the show. And we will be back in just a moment.
Memories make us laugh and cry.
And sometimes cringe when we look back at our fashion choices.
But in between flashbacks of bowl cuts and dad jeans, our memories are fading. And so is the old media that holds them. Hi, I'm Adam Baselager.
And I'm Nick Mocco, and we're the founders of Legacy Box.
Legacy Box is the easiest and safest way to preserve your family memories.
Here's how it works. Fill Legacy Box with your outdated media. We professionally digitize and send them back on DVDs, thumb drive, or the cloud.
Look, those forgotten home movies, VHS tapes, film reels, and photos are degrading right before your eyes.
Experience peace of mind and enjoy reliving the glory days. Join more than 500,000 families who have already trusted Legacy Box.
Save your memories today. Visit legacybox.com/save. And for a limited time, get 40% off your order. That's legacybox.com/save for 40% off. Legacybox.com/save.
Welcome back to Face the Nation. And Wisconsin Republican Senator Ron Johnson joins us this morning from Green Bay. Welcome to the show. Senator, the president tweeted this morning that he may shut down the government if he doesn't get border wall funding. You're the chair of the Homeland Security Committee. Should we expect a September shutdown?
Let's hope not. I think hopefully most of the appropriation bills will actually be passed. A little better prioritization of spending. So I certainly don't like playing shutdown politics.
And how damaging would that be for Republicans ahead of the November races?
I don't think it'd be helpful, so let's try and avoid it.
All right. Well, you sound more optimistic than the president does this morning. Let me ask you about the positive GDP number we saw on Friday. You heard Larry Kudlow, the president's economic director, saying this is really a reason to give your support to the president here, that the pain that American farmers are experiencing ultimately will be worth it. Do you believe that when it comes to Wisconsin's farmers?
Well, first of all, I'm far more optimistic as of some of those numbers than I was at the beginning of the week. You know, it's really, excellent news. In the last 2 years of the Obama administration, business investment only grew at an average of 0.6%. The last six quarters, we've grown an average of 7.3%, and that's just business investment that lays the foundation for future economic growth. So I think it's incredibly good numbers and very strong economy. And my concern about the trade wars and the tariffs is it puts all that potentially at risk. But again, I was also very encouraged the fact that the president called a truce with the European president or European commissioner president. In terms of a truce on the trade war, let's start negotiating that deal. Mm-hmm. That I would, certainly provide a united front against China, which is the main problem when it comes to trade.
Well, that's it's an agreement to reach a deal rather than deal itself. But Senator, it sounds
but at least it's a truce.
Sure.
It's a truce.
But you're really softening
the
criticism that you voiced earlier this week. I mean, you sent a letter to the White House saying there's already permanent damage to the U.S. from the trade war. You said it's becoming more and more like a Soviet era economy.
Well, certainly the $12 billion aid program, it's a Depression-era program, which certainly proves Ronald Reagan's maxim that the closest thing to eternal life here on Earth is a government program. That's not going to work in any government's hands. So, my hope is that by calling a truce, by moving forward to completing these deals, we never even have to try and implement that $12 billion program, because that would be a mess. And my responsibility is to stay in touch with my constituents and then convey the harm being done by these trade wars, by these tariffs. And the $12 billion package does show the president's listening. So President Trump is trying to shock the world trading system, because ever since World War II, America's been very generous. Our trading partners have taken advantage of our generosity. Other
so
presidents have tried. We've had some
success. So you support the $12
billion
in aid, or you don't?
No. That, hopefully it never gets implemented. What I'm supporting is President Trump's goal of free trade, fair trade, and reciprocal trade, and we haven't had it. He's trying to shock the system. I take the signal that he called a truce, that he at least understands there's harm being done, so he's trying to propose some way to mitigate that harm. The best way to mitigate the harm is conclude the trade deal with Europe, with Mexico, with Canada, conclude NAFTA, then as a united trading world, we can go to China and demand that they stop stealing our industrial secrets, our military secrets, that they start abiding by the world trading rules, because China represents more than 60% of our trade deficit. They are the primary problem, and I just don't agree with the fact that if we're at war with everybody, that we're going to adequately be able to address the main problem, which is China.
Well, let's talk about the problem in Russia. I know you were in Moscow recently. You came back, and you said you think that the reaction to Russian interference was overblown, and you called for a softening of sanctions. Do you still believe that?
What I called to reevaluate which sanctions actually work. We are not seeing a
so
change in behavior of Russia.
And
that's
you want
the whole purpose.
Hold back?
Well, I want them directed. I think, from personally, again, I'm chairman of the European Subcommittee. We've held hearings. I know how malign Russia's behavior is. I personally believe the sanctions targeted individuals, the oligarchs, the kleptocrats. That would be far more effective than the types of sanctions, for example, that reduce American businesses' influence in Russia. That's very positive influence. So all I was saying is let's target the sanctions so they actually achieve the purpose, which is change their behavior. Get them to pull out of eastern Ukraine. Right now, that's not happening. But no, Russia is an unfriendly adversary. I would much rather, through positive engagement, trying to get them to change behavior, have them start moving toward no worse than a friendly rival than have them slip into the category of an enemy. So I completely agree that we should talk to Russia, but I completely agree that we need to approach Russia with real strength and resolve, and that's tightening sanctions, but the ones that actually work.
All right, Senator, thank you very much. We will be right back with a look at how those tariffs and the president's handling of the economy are seen by voters.
What's your next adventure? Everyone deserves a chance to do what they love. Pacific Life helps you reach financial goals while you go after your personal ones. Plans change over time, and your financial solutions can too. Pacific Life has a variety of financial solutions that can help you complement your life goals and passions while managing the uncertainties. Backed by more than 150 years of experience, you can count on Pacific Life to be there so you can go out and keep living your best life. Pacific Life is one of the most dependable and experienced insurers in the industry and has been named one of the 2019 World's Most Ethical Companies by the Ethisphere Institute. The freedom to go after whatever is next for you? That's the power of Pacific. Ask a financial professional about how Pacific Life can help give you the freedom to do what you love, or visit www.pacificlife.com.
We're 100 days out from the election, and we've got some new CBS News Battleground Tracker poll numbers on the economy, trade, tariffs, and more. We're joined by CBS News Director of Elections and Surveys, Anthony Salvanto, to help us break it down. Anthony, I know you've been in the field. You've been crunching numbers. The president was very proud of this economic growth number he touted this week. Is it winning him political support?
Some. Look, optimism is high. Optimism is outweighing pessimism, especially for his voters, especially for Republicans and for people who say that they're doing better now financially. But, you know, there's a little bit of broader context here for his overall ratings. He's still in the mid-40s in overall support. And part of the reason for that, despite the fact that so many people say the economy is good, is that, first, Democrats are still a little bit leery to give him credit for the economy. And also, when people tell us that they're disappointed by his personal behavior, even if they think the economy is good, they're more reluctant to say that they approve of the job that he's doing. So some of that is sort of tamping down what could be otherwise higher numbers.
So people are still putting a political filter on this. It's not winning him new support or winning over skeptical Democrats.
One of the things we pollsters have been watching over the last few years is how much partisan ratings play into what would otherwise be objective measures, like the economy. People who don't like the party that's in power are more reluctant to say that the economy is good, even when it is.
On trade, though, because this is one of those complications we've been talking about. You had a good economic growth number, but you have this question of what the impact of the president's trade disputes will ultimately be. And the administration admitted this week that they know farmers are feeling some pain. That's why they put together this $12 billion aid package. So is the president's base still sticking with him?
Yes. What we find is that even folks, when we talk to them and they say that their jobs or their households are directly affected by things in the agricultural business, things in farming, they look like the rest of Americans in that they divide on partisan lines. The president's base is, at least in the short term, still with him. Republicans feel that these new tariffs will ultimately lead to better trade deals for the United States. They do, many say, that they expect to see short-term pain. And there's a difference between that short-term pain and that potential for that long-term gain. For the moment, they say that they're willing to, or that they think that it's going to be okay, at least in the long run, even if they feel some pain in the short run. And part of that sort of puts them at odds with, you know, Republicans and a lot of conservatives who came out this week and said,
right,
you know, what about the payments? What about to farmers? This isn't part of conservative orthodoxy. But what you see there is that a lot of folks aren't really very ideological. They're more practical. And Republicans tend to very strongly approve of the $12 billion payout.
Well, what you're highlighting there is another one of those divides between Republican orthodoxy, which on paper, if you're a conservative, you're not supposed to like picking winners and losers, or market interventions, or welfare, corporate welfare, so to speak. And yet, while you're hearing those Republicans behind the scenes, or even on this show, people say they don't like it, you're not seeing voters peel away from the president based on that?
No. And look, part of this is, it is to a large extent the president's party now in this sense. Trade policy is often a complicated issue. And when we see complicated issues, people follow their elected leaders, the ones that they already support, as guidelines.
Even if it's voting against their own interests.
Well, we don't know yet that it's against their own interests. They feel, a lot of them say, even if they don't like what he's doing right now, they tell us that, A, it's a matter of principle, that it should be what the U.S. ought to be doing. And also, they say that even if they don't like his particular approach, they say they're at least glad that he's trying. A third of folks told us that they were at least glad that he was trying. So it appears he gets some credit at least for that, and again, at least among his base. With everybody else, things are much more mixed.
The president said he's going to be out there campaigning like 6 days a week ahead of these November races. Does his popularity transfer to other Republicans, more traditional Republicans, on the ballot?
It looks like that's one of the big questions going forward. Here's what we know. We know that Republican rank and file say that they would like their candidates to be in line with President Trump. Those numbers at three quarters are much higher than, say, splits within the Democratic Party.
In line, meaning don't criticize him?
They do not often like this. The strongest supporters do not like the president being criticized at all. His more conditional supporters are okay with that. His more conditional supporters, which make up about half of his overall support, are okay with the back and forth between him and members of Congress. The thing I think to watch, though, is voters across the board, including Republicans, say he's not a typical Republican.
Mm-hmm.
They like that about him. They say so. But does that mean that his popularity among the base, which is high, does that mean it transfers over to Republican members of Congress, Republican senators? That's the thing that we don't yet know.
Was there any political damage from this controversial meeting with Vladimir Putin of Russia?
Well, his base tells us that they would like to rush to his defense when they hear him criticized for handling Russia. There's really been a personal connection between them and the president all along. But we also do see that when we look ahead and we say, well, what happens if Russia interferes in the 2018 elections? Is that okay? And people of both partisan stripes tell us overwhelmingly it is not, even if it were to help their party. So in principle, people are not okay with this, but there's a difference between that principle, they tell us, and what a lot of Republicans see as unfair criticism of a president. A president they think is facing more pushback from the establishment than other presidents have. That's how they see it.
All right. Anthony Salvanto, thanks for breaking it down for us.
Thanks,
we'll be back in a moment with our panel.
I used to think that all diet and weight loss plans were the same. Well, not anymore, because I found Noom. Noom is a new and totally different approach to losing weight and getting healthy that uses psychology and small goals to help change your habits so it's easy to lose the weight and keep it off for good. Noom combines the power of technology with real human support, offering as little or as much help as you want along the way. And since Noom is an app, it's always with you and easy to use, which makes it super easy to stay on track and reach your goals. Plus, it's really simple to get started. Just go online, answer a few quick questions, and they'll create a personalized program just for you. Noom helped me lose my old way of thinking about food and dieting. So what do you have to lose? Visit Noom.com/podcast, Noom.com/podcast, and start your 14-day trial today. Like they say, change your habits, change your mind, and change for good with Noom.
It's time now for some analysis of the news of the week. Ann Guerin covers the White House for The Washington Post. Shannon Pettypiece is a White House correspondent for Bloomberg News. Ed O'Keefe covers politics right here at CBS. And Selena Zito reports for The Washington Examiner and is a columnist for The New York Post. So, Selena, best economic growth number since 2014. Yeah. Does this make the president bulletproof?
For him, it's good news. You know, for the people that voted for him, they take a look at this and it reaffirms why they, for some of them, stuck their neck out to vote for him. And for others, why they, you know, this confirms what they believed that he was going to do, in that they don't like these sort of multinational deals. They like these sort of bilateral deals. And so when he makes some of these trade moves and you see the economy growing through the tax cuts and through deregulation and through energy growing, they're happy. They're very happy with what has happened. Now, does that transfer, I think, is important to wonder. Does that transfer into these House and Senate elections? Mm-hmm. And I don't know if we know that, but in that polling, it certainly shows that his supporters are still strongly behind him, and they back him even when sometimes he doesn't deserve to be backed. Like, you know, most people will take a look at what happened in Russia and say, not exactly your best move, but they'll even still sort of back him on that. So they're happy right now.
Shannon, it seems an article of faith, though, because even as Larry Kudlow was sitting here, there's no actual agreement signed for any purchases of any kind of products at this point. There is no trade deal.
Right. And EU officials were pushing back a lot on the rosy picture that the White House was painting here. I think there's still a lot of questions we don't know about what the long-term or even short-term consequences of these tariffs are going to be. Remember, these are second quarter numbers. The full effect of these tariffs haven't been felt. They're just starting to be felt now. And when you look at some of these states, Michigan, Wisconsin, Minnesota, the manufacturing industries in those states are the ones who are going to feel this the most. And we're not just talking about GM, which put out very negative numbers this week because of these tariffs, but we're talking about a small company that makes aluminum foil labels, a company that makes washing machine parts because of the increase in cost of steel and aluminum. So I think this is a story that's just beginning to play out right now.
Ed, the president is tweeting this morning, threatening a shutdown, yeah, presumably in September, over immigration. You add up what Shannon just painted in terms of a potential economic worry. You look at a shutdown. What does this do for other Republicans running?
Well, and what's weird about this is, or perhaps not surprising given how this president operates, is we heard from top congressional leaders who met with him this past week that they weren't going to have this fight, that the president had agreed to sort of punt on immigration into the lame duck session after the elections closer to Christmas because he understood that things were so fragile right now that it wouldn't make sense to have this kind of fight. Well, what did he do this morning but totally backtrack and say, no, we're going to have that fight yet again this year over $25 billion for a border wall, making sure that there's enough money for ICE. It's going to tie up Democrats who are having fights among themselves right now about immigration policy, but also potentially adversely affect a lot of those House Republicans who don't want to be seen as part of something like that when at a time when they're struggling certainly to build support and hold support.
And you heard Selena say, you know, some people would look at what happened with this meeting with Vladimir Putin and say this was not the president's best moment, even if you are a big supporter. You had the Secretary of State in a very contentious hearing lay out what he could say publicly about that. And I know one of your colleagues defined it as an armed retreat from the president's policies. Yeah. Is that how you see it?
I think that's quite accurate. On the Pompeo hearing particularly, I mean, he was there for 3 hours and he advanced the knowledge of what happened in a 2-hour meeting maybe this much, maybe. And as Senator Shaheen said, he kept going back to, well, here's what the policy is, and the policy hasn't changed. He's speaking not so much to Trump voters as to the Republican establishment. He's certainly speaking to the senators facing him in the room there with a message of nothing to see here, folks. Don't worry. Like, whatever that was, it isn't going to change the policy. And many of the senators said afterwards they're not really convinced that Pompeo himself knows what happened in that private meeting, despite Pompeo's assurances that he does. I think it very much remains to be seen whether this some continuing discontent with how the president handled it becomes more of an issue in the elections this fall. We don't really see it so far. The strong partisan divide in that polling suggests that if you had whatever your opinion of his handling of foreign affairs in general, whatever your opinion of Trump and Russia, this didn't change it much.
Selena, it reminds me of something we were talking about when the president was on the campaign trail, which is essentially the Secretary of State was saying, don't pay attention to what the literal statements being made by the commander in chief. Listen to me instead.
It's sort of that thing that I said when I interviewed him. Voters take him seriously, but not literally. But we take him literally and sometimes not so seriously.
Well, and what about foreign leaders? Who do you listen to? I mean, that was the problem
right.
Rex Tillerson got into, where he would say one thing and Trump would undercut him. And it's a dance Pompeo's doing, too, at that point.
Yeah, you know, I mean, look, he has always sort of been a liberal with his use of words. And I think the literally seriously thing has morphed into the Tuesday-Thursday Trump, where whatever he says on Tuesday is could be completely different on Thursday, and nobody knows what happens in between. But something a voter said to me last week I thought was really, really interesting. She voted for Obama twice, and then she voted for Trump. And she said, look, for years, politicians have said the most wonderful things. Their speeches have been great. But I also understand that they've been massaged and focus grouped, and I didn't always get the results that I was promised. I don't like what he says half the time, but I love the results. And that's sort of the quandary that I think some voters face, because they see some of the results that they want. So, you know, take a look at the regulations being pulled back, or with the Supreme Court justice. But they're not always really happy in the way he says things or his manipulation of the truth.
Ed, the reunification policy and ending the separation policy, the president, you know, this was another retreat, but there are still 700 children or more who are left in detention facilities, not reunited with their parents. Does this stick?
It sticks with a certain segment of voters who I think are less supportive of the president, because they see this as the evidence of an incompetent administration, of a guy who doesn't care about certain segments of the country. And it could speak to those, especially to Democrats, who believe that there's a check and balance argument to make with voters here, that if there was a sharing of power in Washington, perhaps there'd be better accountability for the agencies who were implementing this and a better understanding of what went on. But certainly, you know, if you're someone who doesn't like his immigration policies, you don't like him to begin with, and this is just salt in the wound.
And you're right. I mean, midterms are often brake pedal elections, right? They want to put the power in check and get that balance in Washington, and that's the challenge that the Republicans face. How much do you think that people are motivated, not just Democrats, but independents and unhappy Republicans? How much are they motivated to show up and put those brake pedals on?
I just wonder, you talk about family reunification, you talk about the trade issues. These are not things that directly affect the everyday life of an overwhelming majority of Americans.
That's
they
true.
Don't live by the detention
right.
center. They're not an immigrant. They're not a farmer. There's no issue right now that's really directly affecting people's either pocketbook or safety or something else. It's all about, what do you make of him? What do you make of the function of your government generally? And those are tougher arguments to pin down, and making it seem as if this is going to close far closer to November, I think.
And there was something that the Secretary of State was pinned down on in this hearing, and that was his admission that North Korea is still developing nuclear material. Yeah. That directly contradicts what the president said.
Yes, that left us this week sort of one up and one down on North Korea. They did actually begin the promised repatriation of American servicemen remains from the Korean War. That was something that Trump walked out of his meeting with Chairman Kim 6 weeks ago, saying would happen immediately. The North Koreans, as they usually do, dragged that out, but they did actually start doing it. But on the far more important question pertinent to the nuclear negotiation, yes, the U.S. government has now been forced to acknowledge what was pretty widely available through publicly available intelligence that North Koreans have continued. Most analysts expect North Korea to continue, to begin more seriously hiding some of the facilities and some of the capabilities that they currently have if these negotiations progress. The more they hide, the more they have potentially to give away later or save for later.
So why did the president open this new line of attack against Iran, at least rhetorically this week?
We were talking about Russia. And if you want to get someone talking about something else, why don't you threaten war against Iran? And then when we continued to press the White House on, is there a red line on Iran? What do you mean by this? Nobody in the administration seemed to have a clear answer for that. So, yes, this was all of a sudden North Korea is not looking good. Relations with Russia aren't looking good. Let's turn our focus to Iran. But, of course, that argument hasn't stuck either because the week has now been consumed by Michael Cohen and everything else Russia hacking related.
Shannon, thank you. That's it for us today. For Face the Nation, I'm Margaret Brennan. Today's guests were Rudy Giuliani, White House economic advisor Larry Kudlow, and Senators Jeanne Shaheen and Ron Johnson. The executive producer of Face the Nation is Mary Hager. This broadcast was directed by Allison Hawley. Face the Nation originates from CBS News in Washington. For more Face the Nation, we're online at facethenation.com, and you can follow Face the Nation and CBS Radio News on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. Face the Nation is also rebroadcast on our digital network, CBSN, at 11 a.m. and 6 p.m. Eastern every Sunday.
The Hargan women seemed to have it all.
We were blessed. My mom was amazing.
But detectives would soon discover...
Inside the house, there were the bodies of two women.
A story of betrayal you would struggle to believe if it wasn't true.
I am just praying to God, this is a sick joke.
From 48 Hours, this is Blood is Thicker, The Hargan Family Killings. Listen to Blood is Thicker, The Hargan Family Killings, wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, this is Jill Schlesinger, CBS News business analyst, certified financial planner, and host of the Money Watch podcast. This is the show where your money is not scary. It is a show that's all about you. It's your questions that make it possible for me to provide unconventional and entertaining insights on your money, and maybe more importantly, on your life. Follow Money Watch wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen ad-free on the Amazon Music or Wondery app.
It was the biggest scandal in pop music. The stars of Milli Vanilli, the Grammy-winning multi-platinum R&B phenomenon, were exposed as frauds, but none of this was their idea. So whose idea was it? Enter German music producer Frank Farian. He saw the success of acts like Michael Jackson and Prince, and he wanted in, no matter the cost. So he devised the perfect pop heist. Two once-in-a-lifetime talents who were charismatic, full of sex appeal, and phenomenal dancers. The only problem? They couldn't sing. But Frank knew just how to fix that. Wondery's new podcast, Blame It on the Fame, dives into one of pop music's greatest controversies and takes a never-before-heard look at the exploitation of two young Black artists. Milli Vanilli set the world on fire, but when the truth came out, Rob and Fab were the only ones who got burned. Looking back now, it's hard not to wonder, why did everyone blame them and not the man pulling the strings? Follow Blame It on the Fame, Milli Vanilli, on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can binge all episodes of Blame It on the Fame early and ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus.